Get the very best that Steve Barkley has to offer while cutting out precious time and travel expenses. Working and learning online with Steve brings customized online coaching sessions to your team whenever and wherever it's convenient. Conquer key challenges in 60 to 90 minute sessions, personalize content to meet your unique goals or areas of focus, develop ideas into a concrete plan of action with small group discussions led by Steve. Visit BarkleyPD.com/online to learn more about working and learning online with Steve, including a special introductory experience for new customers. Help your team achieve more with working and learning online with Steve.
Hello, and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. For the last 35 years, I've had the opportunity to learn with educators at all levels, both nationally and internationally. In each of the coming episodes, I'll explore my thoughts and my learning on a variety of topics connected to teaching, learning, and leading. Thanks for listening in.
The Power of Optimism, Part 2. In Part 1, we identified 12 behaviors that Alan Loy McGinnis had identified as behaviors of optimist, which we can consciously practice. As we explored those behaviors, I've asked you to think about how they apply directly to our work as educators. And secondly, should we be teaching those behaviors both through our modeling and directly to our students? In part one, we identified the first two behaviors from McGinnis's list, which were optimists are never surprised by trouble, and optimists value partial solutions. In part two, I'd like to explore the 10 other behaviors from McGinnis's work, and I've grouped them under three categories. The first one being having alternatives, the second category, consciously practicing positiveness, and the third, celebrating. Having alternatives. I've grouped four of McGinnis's identified behaviors under this category. Number three, believe that you have control over the future. Number four, plan for regular renewal. Number eight, have an almost unlimited capacity for stretching. And number 12, accept what cannot be changed. Optimism that comes from options and alternatives is very empowering. I have frequently described that what makes great teachers great are their options. Great teachers are not great because they know what to do. Great teachers are great because they always have something else to try. I've described that you can find really great teachers when you come into a school in April and you hear the teacher say, "Today's the day Billy Jones is mine." Yeah, Billy has shot down 150 of my plans to date, but today plan 151, he's mine. And next day you hear the teacher park in the car, 152, here we come. It's a growth mindset. It's a growth mindset on the part of the teacher when the teacher says, "I know I'm capable of learning what it takes to be successful." And that growth mindset then, I believe, is passed on to students. Teachers, if they take everything they know about effective teaching and learning, and they were to place it inside of a balloon, the outside of that balloon comes their areas of further study. So throughout an educator's career, their constant learning is only increasing new areas that they can be exploring to extend their learning. That's that constant renewal. Teachers who are constantly learning find that that learning increases their optimism, and their optimism drives them to future and continued learning. Educators who have that self-efficacy about their ability to learn what they need to learn to be successful, I believe, model and pass that efficacy on to their students. The second group that I'd like to explore with you is consciously practicing positiveness. And under this section, I've placed these skills from McGinnis's work. Number five, optimists have heightened powers of admiration. Number six, optimists interrupt their negative trains of thought. Number seven, optimists are cheerful when they can't be happy. And number 11, optimists use their imaginations to rehearse success. I found that item of interrupting their negative thoughts to be extremely powerful. I think there was a tendency, at least on my part, to think that optimists didn't have negative thoughts, and then almost a sense of wanting to beat myself up every time I had one. But I realized it's not that optimists don't have the negative thoughts. The fact is that the optimist is aware that they're having the negative thought, and they reframe their thinking. In other words, they consciously change the thought that they're having, which redirects their action. So I use the example of there's a moment that I'm approaching school and I'm thinking about a student that I've been struggling with, and the thought crosses my mind, I can't stand that student. And having heard my voice, having heard the thought, I can reframe it. And the reframe is, I need to find something about that student to like. In other words, realizing that the negative approach can't get me anywhere, I reframe my action to enter a conversation with the student to increase my knowing of the student to find that positive piece to work from. As a teacher, whenever I was calling a parent to either phone or face-to-face conversation to discuss a problem that I was dealing with their child, I realized prior to making the call that there has to be something positive about the child that I can discuss with the parent, because any hope of putting a plan together for improvement, a way of making things better, will begin with a positive element that already exists. And fortunately for me, I was team teaching with other teachers, because there were times that we sat down and as a group investigated what is the positive piece of what we know about this youngster that we can use to build our plan for change and growth for the child. Connected with that concept of interrupting your negative thoughts was McGinnis's other statement that optimists are cheerful when they can't be happy. And that really rang through my mind. It's pretty easy to be cheerful when you can't be happy. But when you're approaching school on a day that's been difficult for you personally, and you're walking in the door of that school, there's a necessity to consciously take on that behavior of being cheerful. I recall years ago having read an interview with a person on Broadway, an actor, who was asked how they can manage to put the same show on every day, twice during the week when there's a matinee. And the interviewer said there has to be days that you approach the theater and you're just not feeling like doing it. And the actor agreed that there were, and went on to say that on those days, the actor went in early and went behind stage and peeked through the curtain and looked for that family that was attending their first Broadway show ever. And then in their mind said, that person deserves it from me. And they, in effect, put on an act of being happy to be there and doing what they're doing. And as the show begins and moves forward from there, that act actually influenced the performer, that by well into the show, they now had that positive feeling. And I think the same is true for us as teachers. There's a day in the afternoon when I've taught this lesson three times already, and I've just had school lunch, and I'm headed down the hall, and I'm touching that door of that classroom, and I'm feeling less than positive and enthusiastic, that I have to take on the thought that these students are seeing the lesson for their first time. And I use the phrase, you have to fake it until you make it. So you put on that act of positiveness and energy before it actually appears and shows up in your work.
Thanks for listening, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.